Jay Sekulow, in light of the horrific terrorist attack in Chattanooga, it's time for our military to be armed.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Some 30 FBI agents arriving today in Chattanooga, Tennessee, to try to determine the motive in last week's horrific shooting spree that left five service members dead.
The FBI did take away from the home of Muhammad Abdulaziz some writings. These writings are said to be older in nature, some of them ramblings, many of them, according to a family representative I talked to, written when he was in a very depressive state, as he has been off and on for the past few years. The family also confirms that Abdulaziz traveled to Jordan in 2014 to stay with his grandfather to get away from friends that his family characterizes as, quote, bad influences.
We'll have a directive that comes out today that basically asks our adjutant general to review where it's appropriate for our officers to be armed to a better degree than they were in the past.
So you may need an act of Congress.
Well, ultimately, that would help clear things up because on federal grounds, we have limited authorities what we can do. We're going to do everything we can.
Right.
End of the day, it will be a lot better if we have clarity from the federal side.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
We have to, I think, strongly consider having armed personnel in those locations.
Why wouldn't we? It seems like we have to now, right?
At this stage, I believe we certainly have to. And to me, it's only a question of how it's done. But no, because they are now considered to be, quote unquote, legitimate targets by ISIS. And the military people sitting in a recruiting office in a strip mall are as vulnerable as anybody could be. Mm-hmm. So I would say, again, bulletproof it and have armed personnel in that recruiting station. Yes.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Governors in Indiana, Florida, Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, and Oklahoma have ordered National Guardsmen to be armed. Our federal men and women that serve in the military are not armed here domestically, including at the recruiting stations. There's legislation being introduced, has not gone in yet, but Duncan Hunter from California is introducing legislation to improve security in armed force recruitment centers. The White House still not calling this an act of terrorism. Listen to Josh Earnest on Friday.
This tragic shooting occurred only about 24 hours ago. And the president yesterday took the opportunity to convey his condolences.
So the president, you know, is expressing his condolences. No one will call it an act of terror. At least the FBI is investigating as such. But you don't have to be a genius in counterterrorism to understand what's happened here. This is radical jihad once again. And what have they done? They have targeted, just like ISIS said, Jordan, they have targeted the military.
Well, that's right. Targeting soft military targets. So those that are not guarded, those where people can't fight back and basically civilian areas with these recruiting facilities, and maximum damage inflicted here. I mean, you're talking about the death of five Marines and Navy members who are killed by these terrorists, and it doesn't matter to them how much coordination they have directly. If they can inspire these kind of attacks, it instills the fear, and if they can say as much that it's not just New York or Washington, D.C., it can happen right in Chattanooga, Tennessee, or outside Dallas, Texas, you better be afraid.
Let me ask this to our audience. Do you think that we should have our men and women serving in uniform defending us armed, if necessary, to defend themselves since they're a target? We'll take your calls at 800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. Skip Ash is a senior counsel for the ACLJ. We got less than 30 seconds here, Skip, but you said something right before we went on the air, and that is that the war is in a different place now.
That's exactly right. The war has come to us. This is another indication that those who hate our system, those who are against us because of what we stand for, are willing to bring the war to our soil on a one-on-one basis. It's no longer just 3,000 casualties in New York City with planes. It's now individuals going out and shooting members of our military one-on-one. The war is here. We need to face it.
All right, folks. We'll take your calls at 800-684-3110. You think the president will allow the DOD directive to be changed? 800-684-3110. We've got a brand-new petition of protect our troops. Allow them to have self-defense to protect themselves and us. You can add your name to that petition at ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255. ACLJ.org or 877-989-2255. And your comments at 800-684-3110. What happened in Chattanooga is a real tragedy. Five U.S. military personnel gunned down by a terrorist. It's not the first time our American military personnel have been targeted. The Fort Hood terrorist attack left 13 soldiers dead. Yet, for the most part, our soldiers remain unarmed. They can't protect themselves. Our brave men and women in uniform are jihadist targets right here at home because the enemy has brought the battle to America. Defense Department priorities must change. We're sending urgent letters to the Department of Defense and Congress demanding that our men and women in uniform be equipped to defend themselves. They are the target. Their protection is paramount. Join our call today. Sign on to our petition to allow our soldiers to protect themselves from jihad. Call now, 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org. Americans' freedom under attack by the biggest and most dangerous branch of government, the federal bureaucracy. In his new book, Undemocratic, How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Your Liberty and Freedom, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sounds the alarm. It's a powerful look at what's become the fourth branch of government. It's not in the Constitution, but the federal bureaucracy has become an out-of-control, unelected monstrosity that robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government. Hey, welcome back, everybody. 1-800-684-3110. We're talking about the situation that right now, here's how it stands. Indiana, Florida, Texas, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Louisiana. Governors have said they're going to allow their National Guardsmen in wake of the Chattanooga shootings, the terrorist attack there, to be armed. Tennessee, Governor Haslam said they've got an unusual situation in Tennessee, and that is they're reviewing their security policies and what can be done, but many of the National Guard armories in Tennessee are on federal facilities, so until the federal law is changed, nothing moves forward. So they're looking at that. We have a petition up at the ACLJ, and you're getting emails about this today, and 18,000 people have already signed it. It's just gone up today. And it says, protect our troops so they can defend themselves, and really so they can defend us. So here's what it says. Terrorists once again murdered American soldiers on U.S. soil. ISIS and other jihadist armies are calling on Islamic radicals to target and kill American soldiers. One terrorist struck in Chattanooga at a military recruiting station, killing five brave U.S. soldiers. The Fort Hood terror attack, remember that one, 13 soldiers killed. Yet for the most part, our soldiers are unarmed. They can't even protect themselves. Our brave men and women in uniform are jihadist targets right here in the United States. As Skip Ash just said, the war is here. The enemy has brought the battle to America, and the Defense Department priorities must change. We're sending an urgent letter to the Defense Department and Congress demanding that our men and women in uniform be equipped to defend themselves. They are a target. Their protection is paramount. Join our call. To sign on to this petition, we urge all of you to do it. It's aclj.org or 1-877-989-2255. aclj.org or 877-989-2255. I urge you to sign this petition. We want quick movement on this. I want to put this into a little bit of context first. Let me go to Jordan here, and then I'm going to have Joseph Williams, who's been reviewing the Department of Defense directive and Skip comment. But let me go to Jordan first. We know from our study of ISIS and our engagement in the Middle East that the individual targeting that's taking place, we've seen it in multiple sources now, of course, most recently in Chattanooga, is something that is an ISIS playbook. This is what they're encouraging. As Skip said, not everything's an airplane. They are encouraging these type of, they're not, and by the way, I don't call them lone wolves because the reality is they're inspired, or if not directed by ISIS or related groups. But this is part of the modus operandi, Jordan, of these groups, and we've been studying this for a couple of years.
Well, that's absolutely right. These groups, their whole ideology is based on how can they export their terrorism to countries in the Western world, specifically America being the top target, without having to do a lot of recruitment, without having to do a lot of work, without having to try to figure out how do you get people in and out. And this was an individual who was had a U.S. passport, is traveling the world, and is in the Middle East for extended periods of time, possibly in Yemen, and trained with these radicals, has that U.S. passport. Whenever they can, they are sparked to turn violently, they're already here. They don't have to go through some special process or secret process. They are right here at home.
In this particular case, by the way, the FBI is investigating a what looks like a seven-month trip to Jordan and Yemen, and then came back, as one of his friends said, a very different person. Interestingly, from Twitter, we got an interesting comment, and that is the president has not ordered the flags at half staff. I know in Tennessee they have, and other places they have as well, but the White House still isn't calling it terrorism. All right, let's get a perspective on this, and that is what we're dealing with. Why is it that the, and Skip, let me go to you first on this, on, well, let's first describe what the directive is. So Joseph Williams is in counsel with the ACLJ and has reviewed the directives, and then Skip's going to give you some of the history, but let's talk about what it actually does. This is why we, right now today, men and women in our recruiting offices are not armed as of today.
That is correct. In 1992, the Department of Defense issued a directive limiting the ability of servicemen and women from being able to defend themselves. This is the language from the Department of Defense official policy. It is DOD policy to limit and control the carrying of firearms by DOD military and civilian personnel. And then in 2011, after the Fort Hood murders, that is correct, the Department of Defense reissued this same policy, further restricting it, putting language in there saying it had to have something to do with missions or direct threats. The direct threat is here.
Yeah, well, the direct threat, unfortunately, is here. And the fact is, the idea that you doubled down on this after Fort Hood is a bit ridiculous. But, Skip, Skip Ash, by the way, is the head of our National Security Practice Group, but also senior counsel for the ACLJ and lieutenant colonel in the United States Army. So putting on your Army hat here, there was a reason they had the directive. It's just the world has changed. But describe what the reason was.
Well, the reason originally was to make sure that we don't have weapons just floating around military installations. We have a lot of young people and so forth that are there. They have the passions of everybody else, girlfriends, boyfriends, this type of thing, to make sure that there was not any type of potential to have a problem there. But we have to keep in mind now that we are in a different situation. We now have a situation where the enemy has brought the fight to us, and we need to keep in mind that the vast majority of our military now has been engaged in combat for the last 10-plus years, and these men and women are trained in the proper use of firearms. So they are able to defend themselves, and they have been trained so that when they do defend themselves, they're not going to be just firing at any time Dick and Harry, who happens to be there. They are trained to pick out the targets that need to be taken out, and they fight that way. And right now, we need to have our Department of Defense recognize that we are actually in a war. The war has been brought to us, not at our choice. It has been brought to us, and the prime targets right now are the men and women in uniform, because whenever you attack them, it is such a propaganda victory for those who take them out, that they're going to be the prime targets until they can defend themselves. And the Department of Defense has a responsibility. Every commander has a responsibility for force protection, and that is to protect the men and women under their command.
You know, interesting, Jordan, I don't see that this president, unless we get congressional action, we think they should change the DOD order, but I don't see it happening.
No, I mean, this will take pressure from Congress, pressure from the American people, and we can't, you know, have these events like this, then move on, and then it happens again, and then we talk about it, and then move on. This should be the impetus, the reason why we get this done now and fixed. I don't think any American has a problem with those at these military recruitment facilities, which are exposed and, you know, in locations and strip malls across the country, that, and you see them everywhere you go, that they will have some kind of security there, and that's not going to bother anybody in America. Lots of private businesses have armed guards and who are not as highly trained as members of our military.
So, interestingly, Tulsi Gabbard, a Democrat from Hawaii, this is what she said.
But when you look at this attack and you look at the attack that occurred in Arkansas in 2009, both of them were drive-by shootings. This tells me we need to do more about putting bulletproof glass, perhaps, to make it so you have at least one more line of defense in these recruiting stations. Look into the possibility of having some kind of armed guard there, whether it's a military service member or some other type of guard, so that you at least have a way for our trained warriors to be able to defend themselves against these types of attacks.
So this is Democrats. So this is getting bipartisan support here. Now, under this directive, and I'm going to go to Skip and Joseph. Let me go to Joseph. But under the directive right now, you said it was more restrictive after Fort Hood. In what way?
That is correct. After Fort Hood, it said evaluation of the necessity to arm DOD personnel shall be made with various things under consideration. And one of those said, however, the overriding factors in determining whether or not to arm are the mission and the threat. Laying out a very restrictive thing.
Yeah, it had to be like an imminent threat.
Mission.
Yeah,
correct.
A mission threat or imminent threat. And Skip, that's just not the war we're engaged in anymore. So it was fine in 1992. I don't know. But it's certainly not fine now. And it certainly shouldn't have been fine after Fort Hood and Arkansas. The war is different.
That's exactly right. When you look at Fort Hood, for instance, you have an officer going in there with a weapon and who shouldn't have had it because he was, unstable. He has the weapon. Those who are stable, those who are doing their jobs, are unable to defend themselves. This is crazy.
Yeah.
This is really crazy because had they been armed, that there would have been far fewer casualties there, and the one casualty who should have been there would have been the initial shooter. And we have people who know how to do that, and they should be given the opportunity to defend themselves.
So this is, Jordan, it's a call for self-defense. We got less than a minute here. This is a self-defense call. We're moving with the Department of Defense and Congress. So it's a dual-prong attack here, and we're going to need to push both very aggressively.
We do. We need to hear from folks here at 877-989-2255 and online at aclj.org, because that's what it will take. It will take momentum for these members of Congress to continue to add on more supporters. It should be a bipartisan effort. This should not be politics at all. This should be some common sense reform that is done to make what is wrong right, and it should be something that's simple for the president to ultimately back.
This is a different world that we live in. And because of that, we need a change in the existing law. It's really that straightforward. Folks, I'm going to urge you to go to aclj.org or call us at 1-877-989-2255. If you care about our military and you want them to be able to defend themselves and defend us here in the United States of America, you call us at aclj.org or 1-877-989-2255. That's aclj.org or 1-877-989-2255. We need all 50 states represented. We're going to move very quickly on this. ACLJ.org or 877-989-2255. And don't forget, we've got a matching challenge campaign. You're getting an email on that. ACLJ.org. Any amount you donate, we get a matching gift for at ACLJ.org. Back with your calls in a moment. Guided by lies and
Americans' freedom under attack by the biggest and most dangerous branch of government, the federal bureaucracy. In his new book, Undemocratic: How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Your Liberty and Freedom, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sounds the alarm. It's a powerful look at what's become the fourth branch of government. It's not in the Constitution, but the federal bureaucracy has become an out-of-control, unelected monstrosity that robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government. What happened in Chattanooga is a real tragedy. Five U.S. military personnel gunned down by a terrorist. It's not the first time our American military personnel have been targeted. The Fort Hood terrorist attack left 13 soldiers dead. Yet, for the most part, our soldiers remain unarmed. They can't protect themselves. Our brave men and women in uniform are jihadist targets right here at home because the enemy has brought the battle to America. Defense Department priorities must change. We're sending urgent letters to the Department of Defense and Congress demanding that our men and women in uniform be equipped to defend themselves. They are the target. Their protection is paramount. Join our call today. Sign on to our petition to allow our soldiers to protect themselves from jihad. Call now, 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or add your name online, aclj.org.
We're talking about the situation. Indiana, Florida, Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, Oklahoma, and Alabama's governors have ordered their National Guardsmen to be armed. Tennessee cannot right now because most of the National Guard armories are in federal installations, so that presents a challenge, which means there needs to be either a DOD, Department of Defense, directive change. We've talked about that directive, or legislation put through. There is a legislative move by Duncan Hunter. We're urging response on that. If you want to protect our military, go to aclj.org or call us at 1-877-989-2255, and we'll add your name to that petition. aclj.org or 877-989-2255. Let me go to Gary calling from Florida on line one. Hi, Gary.
Yes, hello.
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. This is Gary with from Ormond Beach, Florida. My suggestion was, first and foremost, I am totally for protecting our military personnel. However, my suggestion would be to do it in a different way, and that would be to eliminate the civilian type recruiting stations and make individuals who have an interest in serving in the military go to actual bases where they would have to clear security clearance.
There is a fundamental problem with that. Let me go to Skip Ash, who served in the military, to address this, because it that would dramatically change recruiting efforts and opportunity. Skip.
It most definitely would. Remember that what we try to do in the recruiting world is to present the military to a civilian audience. So we need to go to where the audience is. Our military installations are isolated. They're in various parts of the country. It would require people to expend money to be able to travel to Fort Hood or to Fort Huachuca or wherever you want to go, to some Air Force base, in order to be able to enlist in the service. This way, the military comes to them to present, this is your opportunities, and therefore this is a very effective way, but it also is a way that they're somewhat vulnerable, and that's what we're talking about, how to deal with the vulnerability.
Jordan, let's talk about the politics of this for a moment. The candidates are all weighing in, but more important than that, do you get any sense that President Obama will do anything on – he could change his DOD directive tonight. Do you get any sense that he would do that?
Without pressure from Congress, I'm not sure that he would. And so I think that that's why this dual approach, both congressional pressure, which should be bipartisan, this is not controversial legislation, that pressure should come from Congress to put that extra pressure on the president to act. And maybe with that pressure, he will act and use executive power to do so and change that directive. But I do think it will take some real pressure here.
You know, the Armed Service Committee Chairman John McCain and Representative Thornberry from Texas issued a joint statement, and they said the Armed Services Committee that they have been working on clarifying that an Army post commander's authority to allow carrying of personal firearms or military-issued firearms. Interestingly there, and this is what's so interesting about this, I think under the existing DOD directives, although I think it's far from clear, but there was room to interpret it so that they could be armed. But I think, as Skip has said, we need to change that. That's what we're urging, by the way, either legislation or a change in DOD directive. We're going down both paths. ACLJ.org or 877-989-2255. Vicky's calling from Wyoming on line two. Hi, Vicky.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to call and I guess take a couple obvious things.
We're having a lot of trouble with your – we're going to go back to you in a moment. Let's go to Tom in New York. Tom, welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Yep. I had one suggestion that they put an armored Humvee with an MP in front of all these recruiting stations throughout the country.
Yeah, here's the thing on that. I think, Skip, I'm going to go back to you on this again. Does that end up keeping people away from it that you want to – I mean, I'm saying right now, look, we're under attack. I get that, and it may be necessary. But there is a sense, I guess, Skip, that they want to appear accessible. So
yes,
there's a balance of that, yeah.
There's absolutely – they want to appear accessible. The other thing is we need to keep in mind that each member – that's of the Marines or Air Force or Army or whoever that's in there recruiting is already trained in weapons. There's no reason to add an additional person for security necessarily. If these individuals were allowed to defend themselves, they're fully capable of doing so, and therefore you don't need to add some other external security in most circumstances.
Yeah. Here's an interesting comment. Josh Earnest was asked about this, and Jordan, this goes to what you were talking about. Here, listen to 24, and let's talk about what this means. 24.
There is a Department of Defense policy that's been in place for quite some time, that in sort of in a workplace like a recruiting station here in the United States, that would prevent military personnel from carrying weapons. But those are security decisions that will be made by the Department of Defense, and they will be made not with politics in mind, but with the safety and security of our men and women in uniform in mind. And obviously, those are the kinds of policy decisions that the commander-in-chief would support.
But, Jordan, this isn't a political decision. This is a military decision in defending ourselves and our men and women in service. There should be no politics in this.
Well, that's absolutely right. This shouldn't be a political decision. It should be an executive decision
that the president can make.
Reality. That's right. Executive decision based off reality, based off this new reality we're facing. And we know this is not going to stop. We know this is not going to be the last time someone at least tries to do this. And they should be facing more resistance immediately upon contact with our armed forces this way. And I think for a lot of people, it's a bit confusing. It's actually they're probably sitting there scratching their heads thinking, I can't believe that at a military recruitment facility, no one has a weapon.
Yep. Because that does seem mind-boggling, actually. We're taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. Remember, we're here for another 30 minutes. If you're not getting the full broadcast, just go to ACLJ.org. Of course, SiriusXM, you've got a number of stations, but ACLJ.org is a good way to watch it, listen to us as well. We're not on Periscope today. We'll be back on that tomorrow. ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255 also to sign on to that petition. But I am taking more phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. Let me take Tim from Texas on line one. Hi, Tim.
How are you guys today?
Good, sir.
Just real fast, I'm a 777 captain, retired, probably been in Tel Aviv 50, 60 times, where you can get on a bus or walk downtown, and what you see is armed 18, 19, and 20-year-olds with automatic weapons, and the local people, everybody's completely comfortable with it. And they've done it for obvious years. One, they had the political will to do it, and there was obviously the necessity to do that. That's something that we have to do and have to come to terms with. If you can walk in, how many gun stores get robbed and taken over by anybody? None, because the people in there are armed. And our military are as well-trained, as you guys have stated earlier, as well as anybody. So there's absolutely no reason except one. There's no political will in this country to get it done, and it won't happen in the next 2 years. So you're going to have to bite your tongue and hold your breath.
Well, I don't think, Tim, we have 2 years, because I think in 2 years you'll have more of these incidents. I appreciate your call, and you're right. And we have an office in Jerusalem. Skip the military. That's part of life. I mean, you're actually required to have your weapon with you.
That's exactly right, and that's not the only country. If you go to Switzerland, you see people carrying weapons all the time. So there are countries where this is a routine thing, where it doesn't freak out anybody, but what it does, it allows people to defend themselves, and it puts the criminal on notice that he's no longer the one with the advantage. He's now with a possible disadvantage because there are people out there that he doesn't know are armed, and therefore he has to be extra careful.
Putting the terrorists on notice, I might say, is... You know, look, that doesn't mean they won't try, but we got to do everything we can to defend our men and women in uniform. Help us do that. Go to ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255. ACLJ.org or 877-989-2255. I urge you to sign that petition. Defend our men and women. They are defenseless on their bases, defenseless at our recruiting stations. That's absurd. Let's get this changed through the Department of Defense or through Congress. ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255. That's 877-989-2255 or ACLJ.org. Back with more in a moment.
We're sending urgent letters to the Department of Defense and Congress demanding that our men and women in uniform be equipped to defend themselves. They are the target. Their protection is paramount. Join our call today. Sign on to our petition to allow our soldiers to protect themselves from jihad. Call now, 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.
taking your calls at 800-684-3110. Don't forget our matching challenge at aclj.org. We're talking about the situation with the shooting in Chattanooga. We're going to be doing this today and tomorrow. On the Wednesday, we're going to turn our attention to the situation with Planned Parenthood. But let me just say that we've got a lot of calls coming in. Let me go to Carl's calling from Kentucky on line 6. Hi, Carl.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
I was just calling about down in Chattanooga.
Yep.
I think all the men and women in the recruiting offices should be armed. I don't know who thinks that they shouldn't. They are targets. It's a shame that these guys and women come home today and have to face this after what they've been through over there.
Well, I know. And, you know, the president has underestimated the ISIS threat consistently. This is, Jordan, as we said, this is part of their modus operandi.
It is, to inspire people to carry out attacks that can be successful in this, in the sense of a terrorist attack, a successful terrorist attack, by targeting what they know are important symbols of America that may be soft targets. So they're not fortified, they're not military, they're not necessarily the bases, and they're out in the public. And if they can inspire one person. Now, they all have similar backstories, and I think this gets to another point of this, is they're around the same age, they're usually male, and most of the time they've traveled to these parts of the world where we know radical extremists are operating. And so it wasn't that this individual was just in one of our allies in Jordan, but they also were believed to have traveled possibly to Yemen as well and spent 7 months there. So they fit profile points, not even taking back their nationality or that they may be Arab or that they may, but look at all of their different other factors that come into play and all add up in just about every one of these situations.
And I will tell you this, I'm going to play a flashback bite. This is from February of this year. This is what the president said, and you're going to see why we've got a problem.
What I do insist on is that we maintain a proper perspective and that we do not provide a victory to these terrorist networks by overinflating their importance and suggesting in some fashion that they are an existential threat to the United States or the world order.
Well, Skip, so you have the president saying we want a proper perspective, don't overinflate it. How do you tell that to the five men and the five families of those Marines that were killed and Navy men?
I would agree that we shouldn't overinflate it, but I think we should also be honest. And what we have here is we have men who are born in the United States or had come here as young children who grew up in this system, who are radicalized by this ideology, this Islamic ideology. We have to recognize that that is a reality and that it is here. And therefore, we have to take the means necessary in order to deal with it. And one of those means is letting the men and women who wear our uniform defend themselves when they are a natural target for these people.
Folks, you can add your name to this petition at aclj.org or 1-877-989-2255. And I encourage you to do that. aclj.org or 1-877-989-2255. Phil from Twitter says the president isn't going to allow any type of additional guns because it just cuts against his views, which I think, Jordan, this isn't even a Second Amendment question, because you know what? There's no doubt that a militia, the military, has the right to be armed.
Well, that's absolutely right. We know that this is, again, these are directives. These are executive decisions that can be changed. It doesn't have to require an act of Congress. And it goes exactly to that purpose. I mean, there are lots of security guards who are armed. They're not police officers, who are armed at office buildings and businesses across the country, at universities across the country, private and public, that have their own security systems in place so that there is someone there ready to respond. It doesn't have to necessarily be everyone, but someone there who is ready to respond.
You know, it's interesting. There's 30 FBI agents right now in Chattanooga, Tennessee. If you don't think this war has come to the shores of the United States, it did at Fort Hood, it did in Arkansas, it did in Boston, it's done it again. We've got to fight back. ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255 to protect our men and women and let them be armed. ACLJ.org or 877-989-2255. Your call's next.
What that woman on, she's been doing to me.
What happened in Chattanooga is a real tragedy. Five U.S. military personnel gunned down by a terrorist. It's not the first time our American military personnel have been targeted. The Fort Hood terrorist attack left 13 soldiers dead. Yet, for the most part, our soldiers remain unarmed. They can't protect themselves. Our brave men and women in uniform are jihadist targets right here at home because the enemy has brought the battle to America. Defense Department priorities must change. We're sending urgent letters to the Department of Defense and Congress demanding that our men and women in uniform be equipped to defend themselves. They are the target. Their protection is paramount. Join our call today. Sign on to our petition to allow our soldiers to protect themselves from jihad. Call now 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org. Americans' freedom under attack by the biggest and most dangerous branch of government, the federal bureaucracy. In his new book, Undemocratic, How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Your Liberty and Freedom, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sounds the alarm. It's a powerful look at what's become the fourth branch of government. It's not in the Constitution, but the federal bureaucracy has become an out-of-control, unelected monstrosity that robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government.
Got a petition up that's got over 20,000 signatures. Protect our troops so they can defend themselves. And that is, this Department of Defense directive needs to be changed. And I would add, Congress needs to take direct action on this and do it quickly. We don't have time to waste on this. Ramon's calling from New York on line four. Hi, Ramon.
How are you doing, Jay?
Good.
The question shouldn't be whether they need to be armed or not. The question should be when and why not. I mean, I'm Dominican, okay? If you go to an army base in Dominican Republic, everybody's armed.
Right.
Everybody have the service weapon on them because they need to defend themselves. I mean, we have a problem right here, don't we?
Yes.
The problem is here. Nobody can deny that. The problem is right here. And we are the most advanced country in the world. And why our people don't have guns?
I'll tell you why. And Jordan will tell you why. It's because this cuts against the president's narrative. It's like in self-denial that the war is here. Jordan, this again goes to the narrative of the president. Self-denial, and thus the policies instituted by that president reflect that self-denial.
Absolutely right. Not wanting to acknowledge this real threat that's happening within the American Muslim community, that's where it's coming from, of terrorism. It's the same age groups, it's the same individuals, they meet similar profiles, and they try to then discredit them and say, well, this person was mentally unstable, this person used drugs. Well, we know that in ISIS, there's lots of reports about ISIS using very serious narcotics in Syria and Iraq and giving that to their fighters. That's one. And then two, If this is how you want to see everyone who carries out acts of terrorism, is they've got something wrong with them mentally, well, I think that there's a lot of Americans who would say there's something wrong there, but that doesn't mean that that's going to stop the problem. They're tapping in to something that's very real in that community, and they're reaching out to those who they can influence. And they're looking for people who are searching. They're looking for people who they can impact.
An interesting statement that came out of Chattanooga, but reported actually in the Washington Post. And this was the mother of the Petty Officer Second Class Randall Smith, who died Saturday from wounds that were suffered in the terrorist attack. She said, "I can't believe these people even come here to this country. Why do they come here?" One man answered, "Because they want to kill us." And as grim as that sounds, Skip, that is the reality. That's what we wrote about in our book, Rise of ISIS. This is their method of operation. It doesn't take 30 people. It doesn't take 5 aircraft. It's one person. Stop calling them lone wolves. They're jihadist terrorist army. They're field representatives of ISIS is what they are. Skip.
That's exactly right. Although we have to admit that not every Muslim is a terrorist, we have to admit that most terrorists these days in the world happen to be Muslims. And why is that? We need to go and we need to identify what within Islam is attracting these people to perform such heinous deeds around the world, not just in the United States, but now it's coming to us, and we have an obligation. Our leaders have an obligation. Our military leaders have an obligation to be able to meet this threat as it comes to our shores.
Yep.
And we have to be able to protect the men and women who wear our uniforms so that they are not defenseless when these people come after them.
Jordan, what's it going to take politically to get this done?
A lot of pressure from Congress. That means pressure from the American people. And so it's going to take a dual effort. And you know, America, you know, we sometimes have very short memories. We cannot forget Yep. what happened here. We don't need this to happen again. And we can do more. This is a situation involving terrorism where we can do pretty common sense, come to an understanding and a point where we can actually secure facilities and help to prevent and also to protect the more loss of lives as these attacks will likely continue. They will likely Yep. continue. ISIS is not defeated, so these attacks will likely continue. They need to be at least more prepared for them.
Carl is on line three. He's calling out of Florida. Hi, Carl.
Hey, Jay. How you doing today?
Good.
Hey, thanks to you and your panel for keeping this on the burner.
Yep.
I wanted to bring a couple of things up.
Sure.
First and foremost, I think that conceptually the idea of trying to break it down into a military decision versus Yep. it being a political decision, I don't think that's possible because political and military is intertwined by the design of the way we're structured. Now, having been active duty military for 15 years and been affiliated Yep. and visited
Thank you for your service.
And stationed at bases coast to coast and worldwide, a number of things jump out. And I also wanted to touch on what the clip you had played by our commander-in-chief about not wanting to give them a victory.
Right.
Well, quite frankly, Mr. President, not acting and not reacting and Yep. not acknowledging that we are at war, not admitting that it is brought to our doorstep, not acknowledging that it is here, and quite frankly, doing nothing is, in fact, by default, giving them victories. The reality of it is these are cowardly individuals that strike at tactically relevant, even from a propaganda standpoint, targets, those being our unguarded recruitment stations and
Right.
things of the sort. And from another standpoint, the attacking of the recruitment stations and those sorts of attacks being allowed to go unchecked and undealt with, it says a lot to the young folks of our nation that we are in fact trying to recruit to constantly build the best force in the world.
Let me get Skip Ash to jump in here for a second. I'll let you finish in a moment, Carl. But Skip, it brings up a couple of points, and that is the politics and the military, there's always this kind of tension and intertwining. But the reality here is that this is a decision, as Jordan said, that the commander-in-chief could make it today.
That's exactly right.
He could fix it now.
He could fix it right now. At the same time, let's keep in mind, though, that it's Congress that has the authority to make the laws that govern the military. So Congress can also get involved with this. And then there's third level, and that's the commander level. All commanders are charged with force protection. So I think a commander could make a decision right now to go against this on an exceptional basis by saying that he was facing such a threat. Now, he might have to explain that. He might get hauled on the carpet for that. But I think the United States, the people of the United States would support him for that and would put a great deal of pressure on the administration to say that he was wrong in trying to protect the force.
Yeah. John's calling from Texas on line one. Hi, John.
Hello. Hello, Jay. First Good. And foremost, thank you very much for keeping the pressure on
Thanks.
This. One point I did want to make was I was waiting. I heard a caller talk about Muslims, and I just want to make this point real fast. The religion of Muslim is not a religion of peace. Let's put it this way. You have Christians that go to church on Sunday, and then they act differently during the week, and that's not Christianity. Christianity leads you to peace and to love. Then you have Muslims that call themselves Muslims, but that have not taken that total step of faith into their religion, and when they do, it leads them into hate.
Well, I think part of what you've got here, let me just be blunt, and you're going to see the media spin this as a guy, as Jordan just said, that was not stable, that was suffering from depression. you know, so on and so forth. It doesn't matter. Jordan, it doesn't matter. This was an act of terror.
That's right. I mean, all of the different influences this person may have been under, there's one defining influence. That influence is terrorism that comes from Islamic radicalism, from the ideas from ISIS, from the ideas from Al-Qaeda, what they put out in their magazines, similar to what happened in Boston, similar to what happened in Fort Hood. They all tie together, and they're different degrees of success that are carried out. But here, look at the damage that was inflicted by maybe just one individual acting this way. Five U.S. service members killed in an act of terrorism that the Obama administration won't acknowledge as such, because they don't want their narrative to change, that there's somehow everything is hunky-dory in the Islamic community in America. Right. And it's not. And it's not okay in the rest of the world either.
You're absolutely right. Cody from Texas, on line 5. Hi, Cody.
How's it going?
Good.
Hey, I just had a couple points to make, and I'll make them briefly, sure. And I'll get off the LC talk. I'm a recently separated Marine veteran, and one thing that I don't believe the civilian populace here knows is that when your position as an officer of the day on the base or whatever battalion you're in, you're armed. It's an armed post.
Right.
So even there,
right,
you have a weapon, as well as the PMO guys, which is basically the provost marshals or
MPs. Right. Please. Right.
Secondly, the senator you had from Hawaii that made the comment about the bulletproof glass.
Yep.
One thing I think we need to believe, or sorry, think about, be cognizant of, is that once we make that step up in force protection, the attacks against us are going to get harder and harder. I saw that as a force protection NCO when I was in Afghanistan and Iraq. Every time we step one thing up, they brought something a little heavier hit.
Yeah, and I think that's first of all, Cody, thanks for your service. We're just out of time here, but I appreciate your service, and you bring up some great points. We're going to talk more about this. We've got a post at ACLJ.org. On this, or one that's going up. So we encourage you to go there. And again, Cody, thanks for listening in. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this segment of the broadcast. Coming up, Nagmay Abedini. Let's not forget the Pastor Saeed with the situation with Iran. We got Nagmay in an interview coming up. You're not going to want to miss that. ACLJ.org or 877-989-2255. That's ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255. I urge you to take a stand for our military. Do it today. ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255. There's an email out also. We encourage you to support our work at the ACLJ. We're getting a matching challenge this month. Any amount you donate, we get a matching gift for it. ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. And if you want to get more about the topic of ISIS, our book Rise of ISIS, available in bookstores everywhere.
Americans' freedom under attack by the biggest and most dangerous branch of government, the federal bureaucracy. In his new book, Undemocratic: How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Your Liberty and Freedom, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sounds the alarm. It's a powerful look at what's become the fourth branch of government. It's not in the Constitution, but the federal bureaucracy has become an out-of-control, unelected monstrosity that robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government. What happened in Chattanooga is a real tragedy. Five U.S. military personnel gunned down by a terrorist. It's not the first time our American military personnel have been targeted. The Fort Hood terrorist attack left 13 soldiers dead. Yet, for the most part, our soldiers remain unarmed. They can't protect themselves. Our brave men and women in uniform are jihadist targets right here at home because the enemy has brought the battle to America. Defense Department priorities must change. We're sending urgent letters to the Department of Defense and Congress demanding that our men and women in uniform be equipped to defend themselves. They are the target. Their protection is paramount. Join our call today. Sign on to our petition to allow our soldiers to protect themselves from jihad. Call now, 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. 989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live, Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. We are talking about how to best protect our men and women in uniform as they are here on our bases and installations and recruitment centers in the United States. And we will get back to that in just a moment, but I did want to get you updated on the situation involving Pastor Saeed Abedini. Pastor Saeed's wife, Nagmeh, and Jordan did a couple of media interviews over the weekend. They were on with Gretchen Carlson as well as a few other media outlets. Given the update on Pastor Saeed's case, especially in light of the recent deal that the United States and the P5+1 struck with Iran, I wanted you to hear these interviews to get up to speed on Pastor Saeed's case and where we are taking it for here, how we are continuing to advocate for his release. Let's go ahead and roll those interviews now. Again, it's Nagmeh Abedini and Jordan Sekulow over the weekend about Pastor Saeed.
There are growing questions today about the fate of four Americans still being held prisoner there, whose release was not part of the deal. At least we don't know if it was. Among those in captivity, Pastor Saeed Abedini, seen here with his wife. He is serving an 8-year sentence merely for practicing his Christian faith. Meantime, a high-ranking State Department official who played a key role in the negotiations is refusing to call the imprisoned Americans hostages anymore. Listen to Wendy Sherman correct a reporter's terminology.
The hostages, did they ever come up in the talks directly, or was it only a sideline issue?
Well, the Americans, we probably legally would not call them hostages.
Detained in Iran.
Americans detained in Iran, and of course, Robert Levinson, who's been missing for some years, that we think the Iranians have some knowledge of.
Joining me now, Nagmeh Abedini, the wife of Pastor Abedini. Great to have you on The Real Story today.
Thank you, Gretchen.
All right, so what do you make? I want to start with Wendy Sherman. She was involved in these negotiations. What do you make of her terminology correction for that reporter?
Well, I think they are hostages. Our Congress has continuously called them hostages. Our administration has said that they're being held unjustly and on bogus charges. And so what do you call that? They've been taken hostage, unfortunately.
I want to go back to a couple of days ago when this deal was announced and President Obama had his news conference. And he got a relatively tough question that involved your husband still being held in Iran. Mm-hmm. And whether or not he felt content that his release was apparently not part of the nuclear deal. Listen to this.
The notion that I'm content as I celebrate with American citizens languishing in Iranian jails, Major, that's nonsense. And you should know better.
Is it nonsense?
Well, I don't think he's content with Americans languishing in Iranian prisons, including my husband, but I think we could have been more forceful with the Iranian government. I think as the United States of America, we could have demanded the release of Americans even before sitting down with the negotiations. I've never wanted my husband as part of the deal. I didn't want the U.S. or the world to have to give up something for him, but I think we could demand Iran. We could have even before sitting down on the table to say, you know, release the Americans you're holding hostage, and then we will talk.
Four Americans detained or missing in Iran. They were left out of the nuclear deal, as was any clauses that might secure their freedom in the future. Now, the wife of one of the American prisoners is urging Congress to reject the accord, saying it's the best leverage the U.S. has to free her husband. Joining us now, Nagmeh Abedini, wife of Saeed Abedini, an American pastor jailed in Iran for his Christian faith, and Jordan Sekulow, executive director of the American Center for Law and Justice, who's been working to secure his release. Jordan, start with you. When you hear the Secretary of State say, we're working very hard, this is a top priority, President Obama obviously got into a little spat with a reporter about this, saying this is a priority of mine, do you believe him?
Not really. I think maybe now, maybe that this 60-day congressional review, there's some members of Congress, you've talked to some of them already today, who are concerned about this deal and maybe leaning even against voting for it, even members of his president's own party, who are looking towards for something out of Iran that's concrete, and maybe that's the release of these Americans. So there may be some focus now. But you know, we said it last week before the deal, and I know Nagmeh feels this way as well, that it would be unconscionable for the administration to put forward to Congress, and that being then the American people, a final nuclear deal with Iran without securing the release of these Americans, and that's exactly what the White House did.
Naima, when you have had your dealings with the administration and you've talked to them and talked to folks from the State Department who are in charge of securing the release of Americans abroad, do you get the feeling that your husband is someone that they don't really care about, is a lost cause, or do you think it's something that they're deeply concerned about?
You know, I do think they're concerned about it. I think they are working on it. It was not as high of a priority as the deal. But I'd hope that even before we made the deal, at least on the sidelines, or even before we start talking with Iran, that his secure would have been released. I think we're losing more leverage as we're moving forward with the deal. But I want to say that really it was really emotional hearing that my husband was not released, and yet we moved forward with the deal. But you know, through the ups and downs, it's been really emotional and devastating for our family. But I feel like God has told me, and a lot of, you know, our nation is facing the same thing, a lot of uncertainties and ups and downs, that it's really to look to him and that he would protect and he would heal our nation once we turn our eyes back to Jesus.
And I'm interested in sort of what your husband's view of this is. Have you heard from him at all? Is he had any contact outside of prison where he may know that a deal was made and he wasn't part of it? Or has he largely or entirely been cut off from communications with you in the outside world?
No, we're able to correspond. He sees his father once a week in prison. His father saw him after the deal was made, and Said had also hoped that he would be freed before a final deal had been made. But he's still hoping, and my daughter's birthday is in a few months. She'll turn 9, and he's still hoping that he would be able to make it to her birthday. It's just been very emotional for him as well.
This would be the third birthday that he's missed, right?
The fourth, actually. It's pretty horrific, but it'll be the fourth birthday.
Fourth birthday that is missed, fourth Christmas, fourth holidays, fourth Easter. Jordan, is there anything that you have found that can help any other back channel other than the U.S. government to be able to go through? Can the Qataris or Emiratis help you guys out, or does this simply have to be a U.S. government operation to try to get him out?
We pursued those channels, Leland, and we continue to do so with other countries. But let's just remember the facts are that America negotiated this deal, took the lead. It's the world power. These are Americans. So other countries are looking for America to lead. If they need their help, they've got to make that clear. And so far, the U.S. has wanted to kind of direct this. So it's been more difficult because these are Americans. I want to remind people, if President Obama is not content about this, he's got to really take action, not just words, because the Supreme Leader of Iran in yesterday's close of Ramadan speech said nothing's changing with the United States. To me, that's a direct signal even about these Americans. And so it's so important right. That it's not just Saeed, it's the other Americans as well. We've got to get them home. It's a tough situation for them in the prisons right now, very tough, because the anti-American sentiment is high.
I think all our viewers could imagine an Iranian prison is a pretty awful place to be. As you said, we need American leadership. We'll see if we get it on this and other issues. Naima Abedini, whose husband is in Iran, imprisoned there, has been for a long time. We hope he can make it home for your daughter's birthday. Jordan Sekulow, thanks for your work on this as well. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Leland.
All the best.
Again, folks, that was Naima Abedini and Jordan Sekulow. We will keep you updated on Pastor Saeed's situation as we continue to advocate for his release. But, folks, it is time to make sure that our men and women of the military can protect themselves against attack. It is time to arm them where appropriate. If you want to stand with us and call on the Department of Defense as well as the United States Congress to do just that, I want you to call now 877-989-2255 or add your name to this petition online at aclj.org. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
We're sending urgent letters to the Department of Defense and Congress demanding that our men and women in uniform be equipped to defend themselves. They are the target. Their protection is paramount. Join our call today. Sign on to our petition to allow our soldiers to protect themselves from jihad. Call now 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.